and welcome to the Daily Brief Podcast. I am Paige Albiniak, editorial director of Promax BDA, and today I am talking with a very good friend of Promax's, Esther Weinberg. She is owner of the Mind Light Group. Esther also runs the Thrive program for us, and we're going to talk about all of that, as well as mentorship, transformation, leadership, everything in the world, no, just kidding, and her forthcoming book. Hi, Esther. How are you?
This is great, Paige. I feel like, what else can we talk about?
I know, there's really quite a lot. Again, we might have Esther on again. We got a lot to cover.
Part one and two. Okay.
Sure. Well, we're so glad to have you with us today. As regular listeners to the podcast know, I like to have people new to the podcast, which is pretty much everyone because we only started it a couple months ago, give us a little rundown of how they got to where they are now. So can you just tell me about your career thus far and what has brought you to this point?
You know, it's a funny thing. I would say that I've had several chapters in the book called My Career. I was a music teacher in a day camp in Brooklyn, New York. I was born and raised in Brooklyn. I'm excellent at piano.
Wow.
So it was definitely a robust career to build on. But I would say that during and post-college, I spent the beginning of my career in publicity and marketing and doing that for lots of different agencies and plus well-known brands that you know, like Fox, FX, and Disney. And then I couldn't believe it. When we started talking about this podcast today, I was like, oh my God, next month is my 17-year anniversary of creating, formally finding Mind Light Group. And actually, in 2008, I ventured off to Uganda, Africa, to work for one of the largest child rights membership-based organizations to assess how effective they were with child rights in Uganda, in all of Uganda, and also how effective the organization was. And, you know, I worked on the lines of children's rights, but then I also was asked to work on projects around AIDS, malaria, tuberculosis, a little different than entertainment, should we say?
Yeah.
And then when I got back to the U.S., I continued to run my company, Mind Light Group, as well as was an interim CEO at a global nonprofit. So, you know, when I tell clients, like, I could say that to an extent I know the industry and been in your shoes, I've probably done many different jobs from basic levels to C-suite levels. But what I would say that what I found in my career, when you say, you know, what's brought you here, what I really found in my career is that the one through thread through everything I found is that we practice our humanity at work every day in every way. And that's why leadership is so darn tough and why it's so terrific at the same time. It's a little bit of both skills, because if you practice your humanity at work, can you imagine if you want to give someone feedback, what a hot button that is, or you want to try to delegate, or you want to give people more opportunity, or, you know, it's just a hotbed of, or trying to get people to be more agile or adaptive because of all this technology disruption we've got going on. It can be a nightmare. But that's what I found, is that practicing our humanity and that having that human dignity at work every day is what really has been so tough. And I've seen that not just in entertainment, but across the globe.
Well, let's elaborate on that a little. So when you say we practice our humanity at work every day in every way, do you mean we have the opportunity to practice our humanity in our best way? Or do you mean humanity shines through whether it's the best of you or the worst of you, and it's sort of a matter of managing that?
So let's think of it this way. Let's take in the fact of marketers. There was a great study that came out, since we're talking to marketers. In 2016, there was a great study that was conducted by an organization called Russell Reynolds. There's an executive search firm, about the personality traits of successful CMOs. And they found that CMOs actually do have a personality type. I'm sure that's no great surprise to you and many people that are listening. But what they found is that marketers are unique because they're required to be innovative, unconventional, imaginative. They take initiative, while at the same time, they weigh analytics and data. So just imagine how difficult that could be for marketers. So they've got these traits, but they're coming into a workforce where they have to deal with people like CFOs or engineers or data technicians, you know, all different disciplines. And CMOs have to make these strategic decisions based on, and now they're starting to make decisions on lots of data. You know this, we talk a lot about that. So they have to balance their innovative impulses with an analytic and decisive style. Plus, what they also found is that marketers are agile and adaptive, right? So when they see challenges as opportunities, okay, you take all that. So you got that as marketers.
It sounds impossible, frankly.
So you have that as part of the personality types that marketers have. But marketers walk into the workforce and our workplace is changing. So you have people where they're having to do all these disciplines as one person, and that's not an easy thing because we are people, human beings having a human experience. We come with our experiences, our judgments, our memories, our biases, our energies, our aliveness, and we spend more waking hours at work than anywhere else. So why wouldn't we struggle with our humanity and our leadership when it comes to making decisions about data, if data is not the place that I am so successful at, because I'm more imaginative and innovative and unconventional, but I'm not a data person. So I would really struggle with that. Or let's say I'm a marketer, and as I rise, as we all know, as you rise through the ranks, you have to lead people more. And that's not an easy thing either. And I'm frankly not a great leader of people. So now I got to face that, because I got to make the 20 people underneath me make sure that they're doing great too. So you can imagine what a hot button it is when I come to work, the challenge I am for myself, each one of us, to develop environments where people can be innovative, to shift ideas from one moment to the next, to be agile and adaptive, especially as technology drives our business forward. Basically, what I'm telling you is we come to work because we spend more time at work every day than any place else, and all of our strengths and frailties are on display. And so now, how do we operate like that in the best possible ways? And what support systems can we have around us so we leverage all of that in the best way that we can be more successful for ourselves, our teams, and our organizations? And that's what I'm talking about. That's why the workplace has changed so much, because so much of that is fully on display today. That's what I mean.
Yeah, definitely. So I actually, in one of your, something that was introducing you, I read that you described as a powerhouse game changer who has successfully transformed organizations, individuals, and teams for more than 20 years. So I think that kind of it talks about what you were just talking about. So when it comes to this sort of transformation, but also mm-hmm. this need to sort of encapsulate all those roles in a single leader, how do people mm-hmm. recognize, I need this change, I need someone to guide me through this? How do they arrive at your door, hat in hand, and say, hey, I need you to help me? It seems like a lot to ask.
Well, people don't come to me, you know, they don't come to me and saying my humanity's at risk. You know, they come to me and say, you know, look, I've got, I'm a president to a new team and my company has been acquired. And so how do I create a real leadership team out of this team? And then how do I give them power to do what they need to do? How do I align and make us cohesive and create objectives for us as well as the business? How do I allow myself to shine as the president of this organization? And how do I demonstrate to the group that I'm leading now that there is a future for us? So that's kind of one slice. You know, people will come to me because they'll say, how do I delegate power? How do I become more resilient? How do I make decisions faster? How do I be more strategic? How do I create strategic internal partnerships? How do I manage conflict? How do I gain visibility in terms of my organization within the industry? People don't necessarily come to me going, I want to transform. People will come to me and will come to my organization when there's a true business need. In the examples like I gave, you know, for example, there was a CMO came to me and said, you know, look, our team is doing exceptionally well. We've been succeeding and actually breaking records time and time again. But what's happening is the interpersonal dynamics we've worked together for a long time, the interpersonal dynamics are getting in the way of us being successful. People are going around each other, they're avoiding each other. And so I know that there's something that could give us an edge up to even make us to break through even our current level of success. But I don't know what that is. But I know that going behind each other's backs or avoiding each other is not sustainable. So what do? So then what we do is assess the effectiveness of the team, bring them all together, have more transparent conversation. Because what we do too is we allow people to say things that they may not feel safe to say on their own, but do it in an environment where that we can create safety, trust, and respect. Because that's what people really want is they want to be able to the ability to know that they're making an impact. They know that they're having the ability to feel more powerful. They know that they're able to be more successful. They want to be able to know that that's possible for themselves and the organization that they're with. So they'll come to me when one of those areas has some kind of a mini breakdown, either a tiny thing or a big thing. Or they could say, hey, look, it's kind of like the old analogy with an Olympic gold medal athlete. You know, when Michael Phelps went in, he went to swim again to win all the medals that he won several years ago. He didn't say, man, I really stink. I don't know how I could do this again. He was like, no, I'm at the top of my game, but how do I continue to elevate? So people will come in a variety of ways. And that's the demonstration, the work that they're doing. That's where people come to me and say, hey, how can I leverage my strengths to be better at what I do? Look, I remember once a president of a division came to me and he said, so I want to make sure I got this new role and I got to really shore up what my weaknesses are. I said, no, that's a waste of time. Your secret sauce to your success is your strengths. And we just have to make them make them your secret sauce for how you continue to be more successful. We just may need to angle it in a different way.
Yeah. So all that stuff you just said, I think is why you are such a perfect person to run Thrive. So I'm going to send you back over to Thrive. Can you just describe to us what Thrive is and what Thrive does for the people that choose to participate in it?
Thrive, what I think Promax was so smart about years ago was they said, if we look up and out in the industry, we see we've got this talented cadre of people in this discipline called marketing or in a creative discipline. But there's not a tailored program to develop high potentials in this arena to elevate them to an executive level. It doesn't exist in the industry. And so what Thrive really does is that it takes a group of high potential people from across the industry, across disciplines, and they're all in creative marketing fields, and we provide them with the tools in order for them to level up. Think of it this way, because of all the dynamics that we've been talking about that's going on in the industry today, you know, you've got marketers that now their role has changed. So if you have all these different disciplines that now marketing is now supposed to encompass, it's more difficult to have influence. It's more difficult to lead yourself, your organization, and your team. So what Thrive does is we provide the platform for creatives to be more powerful by identifying and aligning their legacy, their brand, their influence, their communication to lead themselves, their team, and their organization. That's basically what we do, all in 12 months.
right. So you mentioned it's high potential creatives, but who should participate in Thrive? Why? And what are the goals of Thrive?
I would say, you know, the people that participate in Thrive are those that are at that sweet spot, you know, the middle management level. Now that can be, what we have found in Thrive is that it can be a director, VP, very once in a while it could be an SVP, but it's that director VP level. And what we have found is when they apply, I think what's so transformative for people is to look around and say, because it's a program that takes people from all different companies, so it's not just an intact team from one company, but you've got people that represent all different companies that come together, that they look around and say, oh, you're going through the same challenges that I am. Oh, my goodness, I feel so relieved. So it's almost before we even start doing anything, by just putting people in a room. And that's why we call it quote unquote a cohort model, because we purposely designed Thrive with this concept to put a small group of people together, to put them in intensive situations together, so they can leverage and grow with each other. Because we know that if you get several minds together, they will succeed more than if you just have one mind working on their own. And that's part of the secret sauce of Thrive.
Yeah, the cohorts, we'll see them kind of come out the other side, and they seem very tight-knit. In fact, one of the cohorts just sent us a bunch of photos, like they all got together for a night out. And even a conference, you see them, they do presentations, and they all seem very close. You can kind of tell that they've had, I don't know how to describe the experience, but it's like that sort of special experience that you know you're only going to have probably not too many times in your life. Do you know what I mean? Where you really bond with people over something very specific.
Well, I think what's unconventional about Thrive is that our access into people being successful is not that we bring them together and like give them a bunch of communication training, because they can get that anywhere. But what we do is we purposely put them in a place where, A, they can leverage the mindset and skill sets of people throughout the industry. So that's number one. Number two is what we do, too, is we bring them to a basic level of their own humanity by saying, well, what's the legacy that you want to leave now? Not when you're 80, but today. And how are you doing that for yourself and your organization and your team now? And how are you seeing what your brand is and your value is that you're bringing to yourself and to your organization and your team? Because once you see it, I always say you can't give what you don't have. So if people can see that value for themselves, when they come back, then they can bring that awareness to their team. Then they can elevate their organization. And the Thrivers do that just as a matter, because they have it. And part of what we ingrain at Thrive is that you have to pay it forward. It's one of these principles that you don't only get into Thrive because it's opportunistic for yourself, which is, of course, is a basic human need. Take care of me first. We ingrain in people that paying it forward is one of the tenets of Thrive. And I have to tell you that time and time again in cohorts, we do see that people do pay it forward in significant business context ways. Significant. So, for example, they're not just going to mentor other people, but they're going to make transformation happen inside their organization by thinking differently, by being more innovative, by being more unconventional, by being more adaptive, by being more influential, by bringing up ideas that no one else thought of. They now have the power and the wherewithal within themselves and the techniques and technology to do that where they didn't have that ability before.
Yeah, and that's a lot to change. So Thrive, let's talk about the structure of it for a second, because I think that's important too. So these people are selected, and the cohort, I believe, starts in June at conference, correct?
Yeah, so what happens is that we start accepting applications probably as early as December of this year, in January. We like to go through the cycle of, if possible, making sure we've got the cohort intact by about, you know, end of March or so. And then we launch the program at conference in June. So you could say the program runs from June to June. So the parts of it that happens is that there's a launch in June, which everyone's required to attend. And that launch isn't just, hey, let's get everybody together and have a bunch of cocktails or breakfast. What we do is we actually have the first experience of what it's like to be in Thrive. So they start the learning and the adaptation to being in the cohort starts, and getting to know each other happens right away, where there's key takeaways. So they could start doing something immediately. Because one of the very tenets of Thrive is practicality, and how do I practically bring something back to myself and the organization that I can apply. Then they go through a rigorous 360 process. We actually we went through about 100 different kinds of 360 models out there, and chose the one we did because it's really more suited for creatives. It has a lot more of qualitative feedback, so it's much more robust for people. They get an executive coach. One of our executive coaches coaches them for 6 months. And then we get the whole cohort together at the end of October for a 4.5-day intensive retreat at the fabulously beautiful Terranea Resort on the cliffs of Rancho Palos Verdes in Southern California. It's not a tough place to be. where we do go through a very rigorous 4.5 days. where we're teaching them different, we're sharing with them different principles in a very experiential format with speakers and like I said, it's not a come to a classroom and we'll teach you, but it's highly experiential, very much about not just learning by sitting and listening, but you're doing quite a bit. And then after that, what we do is people self-select topics. One topic per, they break themselves into groups, and they select a topic that they're going to now teach back to and present at the conference in June of the following year. So, for example, what will happen is that, let's say at the Terranea offsite, we'll do subjects around, like I said, legacy and brand or organizational dynamics or communication or influence. And then the Thrivers might say, hey, those are all great topics that we want to present on, because they are actually presenting in the leadership track at the conference. So they're not just presenting something on branding or marketing techniques or creative. They're actually saying, how do I translate my discipline as a marketer or as a creative, and how do I put that into a leadership track and share that with people at 300 of my closest friends at the Promex conference the year following. And then what we'll do is probably about in February of next year, we bring everybody together to road test their content, and we do that in a presentation skills workshop, almost like a lab. So this way they're getting presentation skills through their content, road testing their content. And then Steve Kazanjian, the CEO of Promax, will also mentor and guide everyone as they prep themselves to present at the conference. And then they also get a mentor in January of next year. So coaching goes for 6 months. Mentoring takes over another 6 months. They get a mentor who's a senior level executive in the industry, kind of an SVP, EVP, CMO level. And then they graduate. We have a real formal, intensive graduation in June of next year that also winds up with them also presenting. So it's two separate things, graduation and presenting their session at the conference. So it's fairly intense. I would say that you also have to make sure that your company is really on board with you having the time to be able to participate and thrive. So that's basically the layout of the program. There's a lot. It's extremely robust. But remember, you asked me about what the elements are of it, and I'm telling it to you in 3 minutes. But this is stretched over 12 months, right, so people have time to get all this done.
Yeah. Right. Why would you say that the intensive retreat, the Terranea portion of the program, is important?
Well, I would say it's important because if you're going to really create a situation where people are leaning and leveraging each other, you must put them in situations and places where they can, in vulnerable places where people can share more where they can be introspective and ways they can share and learn together. And also remember, in today's environment in our workplace, the pause button rarely exists. So we're running so fast and being so reactive to the environment and the business demands that are happening around us, then to be able to pause and be reflective, not just about your organization and the organization goals and your team goals and profitability, but also you and your impact and your contribution. It's almost like a secret to anyone's success if you can learn how to do that. So what we do at Terranea is we purposely put the pause button in so people not only learn that for themselves, but they can teach their team and their organization that. Plus, they get this intensive experience together so they can create that leveraging and learning together. And also, it's one of the only ways that I know that we can also put people in situations where they can intensively learn from each other.
Yeah, and get to know each other, because they basically start as strangers, right? And then they need to end up trusting each other so that they can, in a way, mentor each other through this program.
That's true. And, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, it's not like we take people and we put them on a 50-foot tower and we drop them. We don't do that kind of stuff, although that could be kind of fun. But we do what we can to keep the Terranea offsite a little bit shrouded in some kind of secrecy, because and the Thrivers year to year, amazingly enough, are really great at doing whatever they can to keep hush about what we do, because we really want people to see this as an opportunity to unplug, to be able to really amp up their level of having time for themselves, to be able to learn, absorb, connect, question, debate, not just with each other, but also with themselves, and challenge themselves about how they're showing up at work and their own effectiveness and the impact that they want to make and the influence that they can have inside of their own organization.
So what you're saying is they all get secret Terranea tattoos when they're done.
That's right. They get branded. They get, you know, we have branding irons that we stick on everybody by the time they're done.
So it all sounded good up until, oh no, you're going to get branded, the section of it. No.
Yeah, okay.
No.
Sorry about that. Okay.
But you also mentioned you also mentioned that they get 6 months of executive coaching and then they're paired with a mentor.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to talk to you about, why do you feel it's important for people as they're growing their skills and talents to be coached and to be mentored?
For lots of reasons. Well, let me start in the beginning. There was an interesting survey done by Deloitte the consulting firm in 2016 about millennials, but I think this speaks for everybody. They were saying that millennials that are intending to stay within their organization for more than 5 years are twice as likely to have a mentor than not. And what it basically means is that if you're looking to retain people, mentoring is one of the most vital elements for creating a level of retention inside of your organization. And I think that mentoring is one of the most important secret sauces that you can have both inside of an organization, and that actually I'm so grateful that Promax has as an offering, because people don't stay in roles like they used to for years and years. So we need people who can help others upgrade their skills really fast. People will stay more inside of an organization if they're going to be mentored. And I don't mean necessarily mentored by someone inside your company. They can be mentored by someone outside the company. And if you fail to invest, you know, as companies, they realize that if you fail to invest in developing people, eventually you're going to lose them. Because the people that are talented, I'm talking about the high potentials, the ones that, for example, come into the mentoring program at Promax and come into Thrive, they know their value. And they know if they're not developed, and they know if they're not grown and not mentored, they'll leave, because there's other opportunities that will be there for them. So by us putting in mentoring as a part of Thrive, as an example, what we're ensuring is that they get a very much well-rounded way to look at the world, because they have someone who's not just been there, done that, but someone that they can bounce ideas off and leverage. The second thing is about coaching. So coaching is a very different discipline than mentoring. Lots of times people collapse it. But coaching is a discipline, leverages the notion that I know, for example, Paige, if you and I were coaching together, that you have the wherewithal within you to solve the issues that's there in front of you. But oftentimes we get in our own way, because that's just human nature, frankly. Remember what I said before, we're human beings having a human experience. We bring our frailties and our strengths, our challenges and our judgments. And so lots of times you need someone around you who's going to be able to evoke and ask the questions and be empathetic and really listen and as a sounding board, so that you can really understand and unpack the issues that are going on inside your organization and to up-level yourself. Coaching and mentoring give you the scaffolding to which to climb up inside your organization and to up-level your talent. That's why people leverage coaching and mentoring so much. They're both very different disciplines, because remember, mentoring is I'm sharing with you where I've been before. Let me tell you what to do where I've been before. Coaching is much more about curiosity and inquiry as a way to get you to up-level your own skills. So when you combine them both, they're a very powerful way for someone to grow their own career and their own leadership.
Yeah, it does sound very powerful. So, and then you've run a few cohorts through Thrive now. What results have you seen? Do you have I know you can't name names, but are there any sort of specific examples of success that you have seen?
Oh my goodness, where do I start? You know, it's so funny because we don't, you know, if you have Steve Kazantin here, he would say, okay, I didn't say that what we promise and Thrive is people get promoted, but I will say that people do get promoted. People have gotten promoted inside of this program. I will say that people have brought back ideas to their organization that they hadn't before. If you ask, you know, it's funny, if you stand at graduation, like we had this past year, and people had their bosses stand up and talk about the level of transformation that people have had, people go from being, you know, let's say when they start, they're more quiet. They don't necessarily share their, you know, for example, there was one person in Thrive last year who was much more conservative and reserved about their past experiences, because they thought if they shared it, there would be judgment around it or tainted about, you know, past and how I bring myself fully to work and how I could be more authentic into the workplace and what I do. And the second, after Terranea, it all changed. Came and actually at Terranea, gently, I had asked this one person if they would share a part of their experience and their past. And once they did, everything opened up. All of a sudden at work, they became much more open, much more available, much more innovative, much more idea generating, much more able to develop other people and grow other people. You know, so many opportunities just become unlocked for people. I think what also people see is, you know, for example, there was one woman, I'll never forget this, in her application she wrote, you know, I'm going to be in the C-suite. And I laughed because I was like, oh my goodness, this is great that you have, you know, she was a vice president. And I looked at her application, I thought, this is unbelievable that you have this ambition. And today she is literally, she just got a job as a C-suite officer inside of a gaming company. So people's dreams and desires can transform themselves within Thrive. And I'm not saying that Thrive is about you getting promoted or you getting a job inside of your company. Even within your company itself that you have, people come with new ideas. They come with new innovative approaches. They're able to delegate more. They're able to develop people around them. They're able to ask more for what they want. They're able to be more influential with their own ideas. And that in itself transforms an organization and a team.
Do you feel like people come to Thrive with very clear goals of where they're trying to go? Or do you feel like those goals, for the most part, get developed within Thrive? And then part B of that question is, do you think it's important to have a clear goal in order to make that goal, to complete that goal?
I think what happens is that people come into Thrive with an idea. Some people come in clearer than others. So some people come in with very clear, with semi-clear goals, right? And then some people come in with none. And the reason why I say semi is because we have found that after we do 360s and we have people go through goal setting, that people have a very difficult time actually setting goals. And decide, well, they may have an easier time setting it, but then the actions to take to support that are more challenging. So I think that sometimes through Thrive, it evolves. Now, it's almost like I remember one time someone said to me, most people stand at the edge of the Grand Canyon, and when they can ask for anything, they ask for a Snickers bar. So I think what happens sometimes at Thrive is that people come in, they go, oh, I want a Snickers bar. And then they start working with a coach, and the coach goes, Snickers bar, you're at the edge of the Grand Canyon, sweetie. You can have whatever you want. and then they start to develop goals that they never even thought were possible for themselves. So it becomes I think what Thrive becomes when people wind up getting to graduation, that there's so many milestones that people achieve, because we actually are able to help people break down truly what they want in incremental practical steps, where then that's something that they can, like I said before, teach back and give back to their teams. So I think people have sometimes a fuzzy view, you know, some have a clear view of what they want to get, but it really does evolve very quickly in Thrive. Because you're confronted. Once you start working with an executive coach and someone puts in front of you, what do you want? And says, is this it? Or this is it, now what are we going to do? Because what you've been doing kind of sort of gets you where you want. Not really. So for example, like for a C-suite, like, okay, you want to be a C-suite executive. Well, what are you doing? You're not speaking up in meetings. You're not sharing your ideas. You're not influencing in the places where you can. And the person will say, well, I don't have access to those executives. And an executive coach could say, what do you mean you don't have access? How do you get access? So it creates whatever limitations that you perceive and you put in front of you. and thrive when you're dealing with someone who's an executive coach, let's see, someone who's perhaps more direct or, you know, however, whatever the style that they use. They can show you that your perceived notion about what you want to achieve is actually quite small when there's a much larger game at play.
My dog would like to ask.
Please.
What I was going to say, so, you know, talking about Thrive and those people at sort of mid-levels in their careers versus people that you've also worked with who are already in the C-suites, do you see a great deal of difference between working with those different sets of people, or do you find that it's because we talked about everybody brings their humanity to the workplace, do you find that sort of at its core it's the same?
I find that at its core, a lot of it is the same. Because it's interesting, I'll tell you, the thing I get often surprised by when I work with senior executives is, as across the board, is, as an example, in Thrive, one thing we tend to work on year after year is around your level of influence and visibility. I could tell you how many executives I work with on that in the C-suite. Countless. Shockingly so.
I mean, you would think that if you got to the C-suite, you sort of would have visibility innately by virtue of your position.
Yes and no. You may have it, but remember, it changes. Everything changes. So it could be, it's the old adage, what got you here won't get you there. Mm-hmm. So for example, it could be that, for example, I had a client of mine who got to, finally after a period of time, got to be the president at a division at a major studio. He has a huge job now. Enormous. So when we talk about the level of visibility and influence, you would say 100% this guy has it. Otherwise, he would never be the president of a huge division overseeing even sales. So the level of revenue that he's able to generate is enormous. I mean, we're talking billions of dollars, right? Mm-hmm. But when it came down to it, his level of visibility of what his vision was, of what he was looking to create, and his ideas for leveraging technologies as a way to change and start shifting behavior, consumer behavior patterns and in the industry and to be a leader technologically, when I interviewed people, people didn't know what he was talking about. People had no vision of that. When you talk to him, he thought I was crazy. He's like, what do you mean? Everybody knows about it. I said, no one knows about it. He says, everybody knows about it. I said, no, they don't. They don't know what you're about. He said, what are you talking about? I've gotten visibility all over the place for it. I said, no, you haven't. I said, who have you talked to about it? Where are the right people in the right places that you're getting the level of visibility and influence for your ideas and your perspective and your vision for how you want to shift the leveraging technology in this space? So I think sometimes what people believe that their impact is or where it's been shared, their ideas and their perspective, there's a big disconnect oftentimes. So it's nuanced. So you may say, well, look, that's very different than if you're talking about a director or a vice president who's a creative or a creative director inside of a network. Well, yes and no. They're still struggling with how do I get visibility for my ideas, for my vision, for how they leverage technology? It's sort of the same thing. It's just a different context.
Well, do you also think, is that a visibility problem? Is that going back to our friend, the studio executive, is it that he has these ideas, but he's just not really communicating them very well? Like, how do you sort of wind people out of this maze that they're in so that they're, you know, communicating into the light so that everybody sort of gets what they're talking about and is on board? That might be a much bigger question than you can answer here, actually.
Well, I would say it's a few things just to be practical for people. Number one, you have to say to yourself, what is it? People have to be very clear what they want to achieve. Secondly, they have to be very clear of what I call inside out and outside in. So, for example, there's influencers inside of your organization that can help bring to light visibility for your ideas. But yet outside of so that's one way is inside your organization. But outside of your organization, there's also people that once you create the right connections, they can also be putting pressure, influence on people inside your organization to leverage your ideas. I mean, how you can most easily see it is an example. I've got a client right now who wants to get promoted. Of course, everybody wants to get promoted, but she especially wants to get promoted. And she thinks, she believes that she has earned the right to have a VP title. That's fine. Now, what has she done to create influence and visibility around herself and outside of the company in order to get to where she wants? According to her, she's done great work and she's developed great relationships. But while we sat down and I said, make a list of every single person who's a stakeholder in this, in your success. Just make a list. So she made a whole list of people. I said, okay, I want you to put a star next to anyone that you have any social interaction with. Anything, people that know you for you. So she put a star next to a few people. And I said, okay, now I want you to put a check mark next to the most influential people that would have the greatest say in you up-leveling. So she puts a check mark. Now, those lists were not the same. So meaning the people that she had great relationships with and the people that had real influence in her career were not the same. So was she actually creating the level of visibility that she needed for herself to really move up? Yes and no. Yes and no. And I'm not talking about being smarmy about it. I'm talking about who's the stakeholders in your success, to start thinking in different ways. And she's very introverted. And I said, you know, you never know once you start networking and getting to know people, who people are. You may get your best friend. You may get your best friend now at work, because what we didn't talk about is employee engagement. Because having employee engagement, having people engaged at work is so important. She can even have a greater level of engagement in her work because she's developed new relationships that have made her more excited about the work that she's doing.
I think also something that you're touching on there is how difficult it is, not for all people, but I think for most people, to leverage that network, to market themselves, you know, to sort of put themselves out there in that way where maybe you're not overtly saying, I want this or I want that, but you are sort of trying to get something out of them. I just think it's very hard to be your own publicist, basically.
It's a very difficult thing to be your own publicist, especially if you believe that being your own publicist makes you look like a used car salesman. Mm-hmm. Like you're being smarmy and that you're just manipulating and undermining people. And that's not what I'm talking about at all. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about people want to hear your ideas. It's a question of how do you do it that people can hear them. That's all this really is. Mm-hmm. And you have to be able to create your own opportunities so that people can. That's the most important thing. But you have to do it with intention and dignity. Otherwise, you're right. People will think you're a used car salesman coming and they'll never work with you ever again.
I think actually this brings up the book that you're writing perfectly. It's called The Dignity Zone, What to Learn from Hollywood, Yes, Hollywood, about creating a safe and respectful workplace. So can you give us a little preview of what you're talking about in your book?
You know, it's a funny thing. I've worked in the entertainment industry for over 20 years and have come to know and realize that Hollywood, as you know, Paige, has a reputation for tolerating, you know, nasty people, throw tantrums or wage war in the media of who's more talented or paid better, who's got more accolades. But yet the real reason why I've seen that this industry we're in is so successful is because of those people in the industry who act with intention, dignity, and leadership. And I really see those people, they do their best to lean from the notion that their humanity is at play and at work, and so is everybody else's. They know that. And that place is what I call the dignity zone. You know, it's how people do their best work. Think of it. It's the behaviors and routines that sets in motion this environment where people feel valued. It's the dignity zone is what you embody and demand from yourself and others to embrace. It sets in motion these, you could think of a non-negotiable principles of respect, trust, and safety. In other words, you can say by working here, you will be respected. You are going to be safe to share your ideas and you can be vulnerable. And look, it's not, you know, rainbows and unicorns. If you create this dignity zone, it guarantees that when people struggle, they're going to be mentored and coached through it, like we've been talking about. And if they can't, they're going to be moved out of your organization with respect. That's how people do their best work. So, and that's what the book is essentially about. And you can even translate it back to Thrive. That's what we do in Thrive. We empower people to create their own dignity zone for themselves and others, because you can't give what you don't have.
Do you feel like, I mean, I think this is probably something where everybody has room for learning, but do you feel like what you've gathered about this topic is from your close work with some of Hollywood's top leaders?
Yes. Yes. Why? I maybe, hear skepticism in your voice.
No. I operate with people in Hollywood on a different, because I'm generally a journalist, so I'm interviewing people. But I agree with you that I have found that I think the top people are definitely people of quality. I just don't think you get to those levels and maintain if you aren't.
Well, look, I think, you know, here's the deal. Think that there are shades of everything, really. And I think what we're trying to do in the book is say the workplace is changing. It is quite a bit. If you just look at what millennials want, if we go back to that again in the research that I shared with you before, 63% of millennials say their leadership skills are not being fully developed. Millennials, a greater percentage, I think actually over 75%, will work for someone who cares about them as a person. So what we're getting today, that the workplace is changing, it's not quite transformed itself yet, is that people want to work in a place where they feel like you care about me, you care about my humanity, you care to develop me, you care to invest in me. Now, not saying that people aren't going to be moved out or let go and all of that, or I'm not saying that any of that's not going to happen. I'm saying that we've reached a point in time that dignity and creating it and nurturing and evaluating it is front and center. And if we don't do that, we're not going to be able to retain and attract the best and the brightest. We're just not.
Yeah. Yes. All right. I think I'm going to wrap it up there with sort of that tease, although I also think it kind of leaves a lot on the table to talk about next time. So Esther, thank you so very much for joining me. It is always a pleasure. It's always fascinating speaking with you. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Paige. I appreciate your time.
Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. LaFern Cusack is executive producer of the Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax BDA. Video helper provided the music. Digital producer Kate LaKire Marion and social media coordinator Kristen Craik contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at Paige A, follow LaFern at LaFern Cusack, follow Promax BDA at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org. Subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.